Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I truly appreciate your time, your effort, and your energy in making this podcast successful. If you believe that I'm giving out good quality information, would you do me a favor? Would you head over to my new Patreon page? Look at go to patreon.com, patreon.com. Look for Captain Hunter's Podcast and consider becoming a subscriber. Don't just consider it, actually become a subscriber. For $5 a month, you will help support the podcast. So what does $5 a month actually get you? First of all, what you're going to get is access to show notes. Now, the access to the show notes, if I have a guest on the podcast, then you will get access to their bio. You will be able to see a picture of them, all the links and informations, the books that they have, all the articles that they've written, everything like that will be included in those particular show notes. If you hear us mention an article that you may want to read or something that comes up and you don't want to flip through the internet, if you become a Patreon, I will then email you every time we have a show. I will email you the show notes and will contain a link to the information that's mentioned. So if you're going for a walk or you're listening in your car and you hear an article that you might want to read over or a book that you might want to read, particularly by a guest, then you don't have to pull over to the side of the road or remember to do this when you get back. If you sign up for the Patreon page, I will then send you the information every single week. You will get a weekly show notes in your email. So that's the primary thing. That's what you will be getting. Second of all, you will help me support the show. You help me support the show because when I have guests on the show, sometimes their articles are locked and they had to be paid for. If they have a book, I'd like to read it. And so therefore, obviously, I have to pay for the reading of the book. I'd like to expand the show, considering that I'd like to have 2 and 3 guests on at a time to talk about different subject matters. And that means I will have to upgrade the equipment and everything like that. So you will be helping to support the podcast in a number of different ways. So that's what becoming a Patreon member will do. Even if you decide not to become a Patreon, no matter what platform you are listening to, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spreaker, Breaker, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, no matter what you're listening to it on, please make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. That way you will be notified every single time a new episode comes up. That you share the episode. If you know a friend who may be interested in any particular episode, don't be afraid to share it on Facebook. Don't be afraid to share it in email or what have you. And lastly, rate the episode. Make sure that you rate the episode, give it that thumbs up, and let me know how I can do things a little bit better. So I'd like for you to subscribe, share, and rate. Today's episode is going to be a good one. It's going to be a 2-part episode. I had a PhD on Dr. Dawn Perlmutter. She was fascinating. I wanted to talk to her about Blue Lives Matter and an article that she wrote for Law Enforcement Today. That article is called "They Want to Make the Blue Lives Matter Flag a Symbol of Racism. We Won't Let Them." She wrote this in July 15, 2019. She wrote that article for Law Enforcement Today. So I came across the article and I just happened to reach out to her because I thought the article was interesting. She was so kind enough to respond and she decided to be on the show. So that's who we're going to deal with. We got so heavy into the conversation that we were having concerning her line of work that I decided to break this episode up into 2 different episodes. So I'm really hoping that you guys will enjoy it. So that's who she is, Dr. Dawn Perlmutter. So let me read to you a little bit of her bio. Dr. Dawn Perlmutter is a director of Symbolic Intelligence Group. She is a subject matter expert in the areas of symbols, symbolic methodologies, atypical homicide, and ritualistic crimes. She routinely provides law enforcement agencies with specialized information to assist in operations, investigation, and analysis. She consults and trains law enforcement agencies throughout the United States, has advised police departments and prosecutors' office on numerous cases of ritual homicide, and presents expert witness testimony on ritualistic crimes. Dr. Dawn Perlmutter is an adjunct professor in the forensic medicine program at Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine and an instructor for Tri-Tech Forensics. She is an author of several investigation books and numerous textbooks, encyclopedia, and journal publications. Dr. Perlmutter is an active member of the American Investigation Society of Cold Cases, that's the AISOCC, and the VDOC Society, organizations that assist in solving cold case crimes. Homicide. She has her master's degree from the American University in Washington and her doctorate of philosophy from New York University. I just happened to go over to Amazon and she also has a book investigating ritualistic terrorism and ritualistic crimes. So make sure you guys check that out. At the end of this particular episode, you're going to notice that it kind of seems to go on. That's only because, once again, I broke up the episode. So you have to tune in next week and we'll get to the Blue Lives Matter. But the first part of this episode is just going to be about her work in symbolism and ritualistic crimes and everything like that. So I really think you guys are going to enjoy it. We talked about for about almost 20 minutes about this particular subject. It's really fascinating to me. And if there's any law enforcement officers who are dealing with any type of ritualistic crimes, I seriously hope that you would look up Dr. Dawn Perlmutter if you need any assistance in any cases that you have going on. So without further ado, here's the interview with Dr. Dawn Perlmutter. Thank you for being on the podcast. This is Captain Hunter, and I'm speaking with Dawn Perlmutter, PhD. So welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
No problem. I try to do a lot of episodes on different subject matters. So I was Googling Blue Lives Matter and just trying to develop an episode about that. I came across your article in Law Enforcement Today, and it's titled, "They Want to Make the Blue Lives Matter Flag a Symbol of Racism. We won't let them." But before we get into that, let me just ask you a little bit about your work, what you do as far as the different places that you work. Now, you're the director of
Symbol Intelligence Group.
Okay. So could you tell us what you do for them?
Well, I founded the Symbol Intelligence Group, and we're a very specialized group of people that basically, we do a lot of requests for information that has to do with any kind of tattoo, symbol, graffiti, code. We do training. We work with information operations. There's just a number of anything that has to do with this very specialized area of anything that has to do with symbolism. I specialize in symbolism that occurs in crimes, ritualistic crimes, and specifically ritual homicides, because they have a ton of different types of symbolic evidence. So it's a very sort of niche area.
I got you. Now, is there a lot of that? Now, obviously, I was a former police officer, but we did not run into much ritualistic type of situations. Is there a lot of that? Are you busy is essentially what I'm asking.
Oh, there's you have to understand that ritualistic crimes involves everything from gang initiations to narco killing, terrorists that have specific rituals that they do prior to doing something. We're very busy. We're very busy.
Okay.
Yes. And it everything from cult groups, just anything that involves evidence that's unusual. So if there's like you go into a serve a warrant and there's all this weird stuff on a bureau and the officer doesn't know what it is, but if you go to arrest someone and they're really upset, we can tell you what it is, what the objects mean, what it means to them.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a lot of different types of things.
Okay. Yes, I can certainly understand that. Now, and you're right, with the gang initiation things, I really did not put that in the lines of symbolism. I was thinking more of the occult kind of situations. What's that movie, Angels and Demons, the Tom Hanks?
Yes.
Yeah. So you probably hear that a lot, could compare it to that kind of stuff a lot. What was the first movie he did that was the same?
The Da Vinci Code, I always get asked when I train, because they're such horrendous types of crime scenes. I always get asked, how did you get into this? And my response is, did you ever see The Da Vinci Code?
Okay.
But yes, that explains my background. There's no training in this area. Basically, my background started in art history, and my doctorate was a combination of anthropology and philosophical methods that deal with semiotics, which is the study of signs and symbols. That was 25 years ago, so I basically developed methodologies over the years and have applied them to everything from interdiction to crime scenes to intelligence analysis to just about every crowd control, because there's just so much symbolism. All, you know, even the simplest thing, like trying to identify the logo of a group in terms of protesters, if they're in front of you, the clothing they're wearing, a certain arm patch. There's so many things that can tell you who you're dealing with. So there's a lot of aspects to it.
I can imagine. Wow. Now, do you get called a lot for the gang initiation type of thing? I know we in Connecticut mostly, and I don't know if other departments here in Connecticut have contacted you, but we would contact our DOC and they would tell us about what gangs would work with who and things like that. Do you work a lot with as far as the gang aspect?
Well, one of my colleagues who's a member of the group is a retired corrections officer and retired military, and he literally does all of the gang. He decrypts confiscated documents. He does all the codes. There's another colleague who will deal with sort of the narco traffickers and like MS-13, because they have a lot of rituals and a lot of occult type of symbolism. So we all have kind of our specialties. I don't do as much with gangs myself. I mean, I certainly recognize all of the different basic symbolism, but I do a lot more with anti-police movements, with all the sort of jihadist terrorist groups and the homicide types of crimes. So there's other people, other colleagues that specialize more in that. I just started doing some training, which has really been extremely popular, on human trafficking symbols, child sex trafficking symbolism, where it involves codes, emojis, and incredible amounts of things, even toys that are being used. Yes, I just did one that was very well received, and it was packed. What usually happens is I will get an inquiry or a request for information, and if I don't have that, and we have databases of tons of things, then I start getting interested in it. So there was a request that came in that put me onto that topic. And then when I started researching it, it was mind-boggling how they communicate even through the dark web and the whole coded system. I had one case which was an interdiction case with a truck that happened to have some symbols inside the cab that the state trooper noticed, and they turned out to be part of those codes. So it's just amazing what you can find out with this area.
Sounds amazing. I would not have known. Obviously, I knew that all this was going on, but the different symbolism, I guess, you know, just thinking about it, it really makes sense to where you can drive down the street with something on the side of your truck and somebody will know who you are or be interested in what you're interested in. So that totally makes sense. I guess I just never really gave that much thought, but I'm glad that you did and you do.
And again, this all evolved on its own. I mean, I started out with crime scene. I did mostly crime scenes that had, you know, we get a lot of inquiries for things just like Santeria, which isn't a crime. But if you're in an area of the country where an officer doesn't understand that at all, they may want you to explain to them what it is. A lot of times I have to tell people, well, that's not, you know, I do a threat analysis. I'm like, oh no, that's not a crime at all. That's what they practice. And, you know, that's a religion and it's protected. And, or in other times I'll get an inquiry and I'm like, oh, that's really bad. You need to get on that right away. And this is what you need to do. Over the years, you just develop. I can pretty much look at something and tell you immediately what type of group it's affiliated with.
Now, does it come often where there is a cross-section, where they come across something that is religious, but yet will still have some dangerous connotations to it? Does that happen often?
Oh, that happens quite a lot, especially, well, just across the board. And in my homicide cases, a lot that happens, because a lot of the cases I've worked on, which, you know, involve the worst type of crimes like torture, and there's people that actually practice things like Satanism. So they will carve symbols into the body. And they're usually religious symbols. They will desecrate Bibles. I mean, you know, symbolism isn't just the actual symbol. When I do my homicide consulting, symbolism is the date the crime was on. It's the position of the body. It's the trauma, what they did to the body, how they arranged it, body parts being removed. Everything has meaning in those types of scenes, in addition to any symbolism that's there. So the actual positioning of the body becomes part of the analysis I have to do. And pretty heinous stuff. Some of it is part of a belief system that they're doing it for. Others, they're inventing their own. A lot of the times, if they're young offenders, they're like mimicking television movies and heavy metal music has really gotten. Put it this way, the internet and television and all of this sort of glorification of like Criminal Minds and these documentaries has really created a lot more homicides. I mean, it's
really wow.
Like, for example, I think it was either HBO or Showtime did a show called Dexter about,
yes, I remember that.
They,
yes.
He was a serial killer who did right. bloodstain pattern.
Right.
Well, there were two homicide copycats from that. I mean, 15 years ago, and I've done a lot of documentaries. I've participated in documentaries. The Learning Channel or Discovery Channel was going to do a whole series on the cases I worked on. But back then, they decided not to because they thought it was too much for people to watch. Now they're doing everything. I mean, now there's like no limit between
right.
the Netflix shows. I mean,
right.
so it's really created another problem for analysis because now you have to factor in whether they're copycatting these shows.
Right.
Like
right.
in one case they used a Saw, so I had to watch, and they had the DVD of the Saw film series.
Right.
So I had to watch all the crazy stuff.
Oh, wow.
So it's a little bit easier when it's a straight up gang or terrorist
right,
organization.
Right, right.
It's when they come in and it has a lot of different unusual things. But the fact that it's unusual usually puts me in the direction of looking for it being influenced by culture somehow. Yeah, it's taken a long time. But like I said, by the time when I get the call and get the details, I can pretty much tell, you know, get the ballpark of what it is.
Right.
Because just experience, you learn.
As you were talking, I was thinking about Dexter. I was thinking about Silence of the Lambs. I didn't think about Saw.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really, really fascinating. How do you detox from that? I mean, you see these crime scenes.
It's very hard.
I can imagine.
In fact, I think one of the reasons in the past couple of years I started doing more work on writing about the anti-police movement and the war on police and the symbolism associated with that was because I was getting a little burnout from the cases.
I got you. I certainly get it.
Wow. Yeah, it's like, you know, just I did it for a long time and I'm trying to, it's just so much easier to write about other things right now. And, you know, I will initially help if I can, but I'm trying not to get involved as much as I did before because it's just very disturbing. Because a lot of the victims are children also. So it's very,
imagine.
Very disturbing.
Probably a lot of children
it's
and
like,
animals, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the animals is a whole nother category of it.
Yeah.
That comes up too. But when I first did this, people didn't believe me. When I first, 25 years ago, when I was doing analysis of like beheadings, I'm like, people actually are beheading in ritual crimes. Academics did not believe me. They said, oh, they always think it's a form of psychopathology or a mental patient. I'm like, no, it's just a ritual. When the jihadists started doing it and then the cartels took off from them, I was like, see, I told you. like I got to say, I told you so. But it just was unheard of. And there's a big distinction between my background, which is more anthropology and philosophy, and people who are trained in behavioral science analysis.
Right.
Behavioral science profiling is based on personalities and psychology, where mine is based on culture. It's a very different perspective. I don't really think that any of the people that I'm dealing with are psychopaths, because that does not help at all in analyzing it. And most of them are actually highly intelligent and know exactly what they're doing. It's just that what they're doing is so shocking that behavioral analysts just think they have to be mental patients to be able to do it.
Right, right.
But I look at it from the perpetrator's point of view, not from our point of view. And that methodology works so much better cross-culturally. It works very well in analyzing like unusual things in like Pakistan or Afghanistan, or because, again, I'm not labeling it before I see it. I'm looking at what they're doing in the context of the culture, or what even the subculture that they believe in.
Right.
So it's much higher solve rate. You know, you have to sort of suspend your own moral judgments while you're doing it, because you're getting into people's very bizarre beliefs. But that's, once you do that, you can really understand, and you can predict, you know, if they're going to do it again, on sometimes specifically on what date. I mean, if they're following a very specific type of manifesto type thing, you can tell exactly, they have special dates they do things on.
Right.
So that helps with surveilling them or something. Yeah, it's quite the profession I can imagine.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Now, as far as the psychological aspect, that's kind of a little bit of my background. I got a couple of degrees in psychology. So that's, I can certainly understand them coming to you from that aspect. Let me ask you this. Is there ever a nexus, and we're totally off topic here, what I want to talk to you about, but anyway, is there a nexus between the psychology of what they are doing in the ritual sense and them being influenced, right? So they're committing these crimes, beheadings, things like that. They're doing these things because they're in a group, a gang, a cult, whatever. Is there a psychology to that? What makes them join the group? Are they only going along to get along? Would they not do these things if they not joined the group? Do you ever explore any of those aspects of it?
Yes, yes. There is a psychology to it, of course. And the person whose philosophy I agree with the most on that is Dr. Gilligan. He was a psychiatrist who wrote a lot on homicide. And the psychology, you know, it's not mutually exclusive. It's when you start putting labels like psychopath, that's different. But the psychology comes in, especially with cartels and gangs and even the jihadists. They're what's called honor shame cultures. They can kill people and murder them and have no remorse, because in honor shame cultures, everything is about your appearance. It's like, if you've been disrespected, the only way you can gain your respect is to do some kind of retaliation or crime like that. So everything revolves around, if you've been disrespected, and gaining that respect. That's the psychology of tribal honor shame cultures. It's very different than the psychology of Western rational guilt cultures, which is why you have to sort of understand that to realize that they're not going to feel remorse, because literally their entire culture supports what they're doing. Mm. It's I've written extensively on that, and I do that at my trainings. That also is very well received when I explain the differences with that, you know, because it's good for interviews and techniques for getting information. And when you understand a person's beliefs, it really is very useful. And of course, those beliefs are manifested in certain rituals, and that's where I come into it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Listen, I can talk to you about that all day. I don't want to take up I don't want to take up too much of your time.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to cut it off right there. So make sure that you tune in next week, and we will get into more of the Blue Lives Matter conversation. It's really a fascinating conversation. I really had a good time speaking with Dr. Perlmutter, so I thank her once again. Please make sure that you rate, subscribe, and share. Rate the episode. Make sure you give it that 5-star. If you don't give it a 5-star, then let me know why. You know, hit me on the email, hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. Let me know how I can make the show better. If there's a topic that you want to hear about, or something you're always curious about, make sure you hit me up there at the email, hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter, CPTLHunter. That's Captain L. Hunter on Twitter, CPTLHunter on Instagram. Every once in a while, I do drop 3 or 4 minute video just to talk about what is going on across the country. Those usually drop on Instagram. I also put them on YouTube. That's Captain L. Hunter on YouTube. So CPTL Hunter on Twitter, CPTL Hunter on Instagram, and Captain, CAPT period L period HUNTER Hunter on YouTube. Make sure you head over to the Patreon page and become a subscriber. I'm asking for $5 a month. If you can only afford or only want to give $1, or if you want to give $20, it's up to you. Any little bit will help. I've laid out exactly what the money is going to be used for, and so it's just going to help me support the show and just make this show better for you. Just trying to give out some good information. If you don't want to head over to Patreon, I also have a Venmo account, CPTL Hunter. I have a PayPal account, CPTL Hunter, Lawrence Hunter / CPTL Hunter. And I also have a Cash App, CPTL Hunter, so you can support in that way. Once again, if you do those things and just let me know that you're subscribing, I will, and make sure that I get your email, I will make sure that you get those show notes. I think the show notes are really important. And as I mentioned before, as we go forward with certain things and different ideas that we have to make the show better and to make you a more participative audience, I will be giving out more offers and just an incentive for you to listen to, so you know that you're getting something, not just the good information, but you're also getting something tangible. So that's it for now, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you tune in next week to hear the rest of the interview, and we still got some great interviews coming up. So I appreciate all of your help and support. Please make sure that you subscribe to the episode, whatever you're listening to on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, no matter what you're listening to it on. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you can be notified when a new podcast episode comes out. Rate the episode, make sure you give it that 5-star, and don't be afraid to share it. Share it on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, send it through email, send it to someone who you like, send it to someone who you don't like. Just make sure that they get the information. Also, remember, I got a blog. Make sure you subscribe to the blog. If you got any questions or comments, just hit me up on those platforms that I mentioned before. And that's it. I'll talk to you later. Much love and peace. Bye.